Everybody, yes, it's us.
We are back. It's Snipes and Stripes on nofilter.net. Sorry we have been gone for a couple weeks, but that is my fault because I've been traveling. I was in Florida, then I was in Chicago, and I just was doing so many different things that I couldn't make it to the computer, unfortunately. I got to slow down, Timmy Peel. Good to see you, buddy. Good to see you, my man. How are
you? Good to see you. You're a professional golfer now. You know, first of all, I saw that Pavelski won it. Where did you finish in that tournament in Florida with the ladies?
Grand Vacations. I was fourth. I finished fourth.
That's good.
Yeah, I had a good first day. I shot 73 the first day and was in second place.
Yep.
Had a little stumble the second day. I had two double bogeys with no birdies. Shot 76.
Yep.
And then Saturday I was a little nervous because we were playing with Nelly Korda. And
did you play with Nelly?
Yeah, I played with Nelly on Saturday. The greens were running around 13. The pins were tucked and it was a little windy. I had no birdies on Saturday and shot and had three doubles, shot 78.
Yeah.
Which I played well, but those three doubles, you can't have doubles in these tournaments. And then, so I'm sitting at 13th,
yeah,
going into Sunday. And I said, my whole goal is to get to the top five. Get in, yep, the top five. And I shot 69 with two bogeys.
Wow.
69 with two bogeys on Sunday.
Wow.
That's
impressive. Nelly Korda might have the prettiest swing in golf, men,
unreal,
and women. Hey?
Unreal. Yeah, she is as pure of a ball striker as I've seen, like in men and female. Both.
Right.
It's just so pretty to watch, and she's intimidating, and obviously she's very pretty, and she dresses to impress, and it was just one of those days, man. It was a really cool day. And by the way, I didn't mind shooting those doubles. It wasn't bad. It was a good day.
Right.
Yeah, it was a good day. But
that's good.
Yeah.
That's
so good. Yeah. Thanks for Whiskey in the Wild, our sponsors, Whiskey in the Wild. Go to whiskeyinthewild.com for the best. Drinking experience of all time. My chocolate and chocolate orange whiskey will for sure change your attitude about whiskey. Whiskeyinthewild.com. Go get it. To Bet Online. We love Bet Online. No more football bets as the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Woo!
I was happy, but shitty Super Bowl to watch.
Well, it's a shitty Super Bowl and shitty halftime, but maybe we'll talk about that later,
God,
too. One of the worst things I've ever seen. And for protected neck guards, our good guy, Tim Peel, who makes sure he takes care of these young kids, is a, yep, very, very important thing these days to make sure that our kids are safe on the ice playing the game that they love. And way to go, protected neck guards. But listen, we got some exciting stuff going on. We got the Four Nations Cup starting tonight.
Exciting.
Canada versus Sweden.
I know.
Are you excited or are you not excited?
I'm very excited. And I'm not sure your mindset on it and what you think. But, you know, you think about it, JR, it's been 10 years since we've seen a guy like Sidney Crosby in a Canadian jersey. 10 years. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, like, I didn't even occur to me until really just about 10 minutes ago talking to Bales, our producer.
10 years. It's since 2014 when you and I were both at the Olympics in Russia. That's the last time we've had any of this international play. So, you know what? It's unfortunate that Czechia and the Russians aren't there, but I'm really excited for it. I'm excited, you know, we've got a great guest coming on today. I'll let you introduce him, but I'm excited to watch Team USA. I think for the first time maybe in years, I don't think Team USA is the underdog. I think Team Canada is the underdog, but we'll get into that more. But no,
yeah, it's really hard to kind of pick this out because every team has its strengths.
Yeah.
Right? You have Sweden and Finland who have definitely adopted the North American mentality of hockey. Physical, tough, very defensive oriented, very talented, chippy. They got grit. They obviously talent galore. I think the best roster is Canada. The Canadian,
really,
roster,
right,
is insane. I mean, if you look down their roster, right? So goaltending, it belongs to the Americans. I mean, without,
yep,
question. And, you know, you win with goaltenders for sure. You win with defense. And I think, you know, that's where the Americans kind of have the edge. But, I wasn't excited until I haven't seen any hockey for the last 2 days.
Right.
And knowing that this game is on tonight, and these guys are going to be pulling their country's jerseys over their heads. And I remember how cool of an experience that is, Tim, to be able to wear your country's colors, and you're playing for a different reason. You're playing for different fans, right? And let's just pray and have a prayer for all these players that they get through this tournament healthy, that nothing happens, so they can continue with their NHL teams, because that's always the big thing.
Yeah, I
We
agree.
have a we have an amazing guest today. One of my favorite guys in the world, and probably one of the main reasons, main influences why I wanted to be a hockey player.
Sure.
Not just a professional hockey player, but an Olympian. And his name is Mr. Hockey, Mr. USA, Mike Ruggioni. I'm gonna snap him over and have him join, because this is really special to me. And we'll have this conversation with Mike. And I've been able to have this conversation with Mike many, many times, because obviously we are friends, and
Right.
we kind of run in the same circles. And
That means
there he is, Mr. Mike Ruggioni,
Hey,
the
my friend.
man, the myth, the legend himself. I love it. Mr. America, Mr. Captain America. What's up, Mike?
Pal, how you doing?
Great,
Good to see
great.
you. Good to see you. You look great.
Thank
Congratulations on the Hall of Fame as well. I don't think I've talked to you since. That's
you, my friend. I appreciate it.
well deserved. About
Was
time
very, yeah,
look like
it was very humbling, and it was just my gratitude. What my gratefulness is obviously very, very high. So, and I know Timmy Peel's excited to get you on too, buddy. He was all excited that we got you for today. I appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're a busy guy, but this is awesome for us.
Mike Modano said hello.
We gotta love Mike. Best, I believe, the greatest American hockey player ever. No,
I was
no disrespect to the present company, but that's just me.
with him in Montreal last Monday night, so it was
Yeah, I want
great.
to hear about that after
Yeah.
Tim says hi. We want to chat about that also.
Yeah, I saw the picture. First of all, Mike, thank you very much for coming on. I was 14 back in 1980, so I wasn't. I'm not that much younger than you, but growing up, I'm Canadian. Growing up in New Brunswick in the Maritimes, but I've been in St. Louis now for 24 years. To the Canadian listeners, are going to get pissed at me, but I'm rooting for the U.S. and I think I'm well. I'm not. I think I'm more American now than I am Canadian. So it's a real honor and pleasure to have you on. I
Thank you.
did see that picture with you and Modano. Who was the other guy from Team USA?
Robbie McClanahan
Bobby McClanahan.
and Mr. Gaudreau.
Yeah. And I saw the picture of Guy Gaudreau in there. And you know, the first thing I thought of, because JR and I are good friends with Billy Guerin, and I saw that picture of you guys, and I go, this is something that Billy Guerin would do. And I don't know whether it was Billy or USA Hockey or whatever, but I was so happy to see you guys a part of that, because I know, you know, I've known the Kachucks since they've been 3, 4, 5 years old, and good friends with Big Walt, and I know how much that American jersey means to guys like the Kachucks. So to be able to have you there, I'm sure they must have just loved it.
Well, you know, the players were great, and it's funny because I think my grandkids were more excited than I was. They were like, my 9-year-old grandson is, he chews his mouthpiece because Matthew Tkachuk chews his mouthpiece. And he said to me, "Papa, you gonna?" And then I put Matthew on the phone with him, and he said to him, he said, "I'm gonna faint." You know, I mean, that was great for me, because they're the new wave. They're the future. These are the studs that, you know, that we have out there playing. And I've said this many times, you know, I think in 1980, I think clearly we opened the door for not only American players, but college players as well. If you weren't American, if you weren't
Sure.
Canadian or a junior player, you weren't really kind of looked upon. And then I think we opened the door, and then all of a sudden the Jeremys and the Chelioses and the Suters and you know, the Mike Modanos come along, and they knocked the door down. Now these guys have knocked it down even further. This might be, and
you know, with tremendous respect for the guys that played prior, this might be the best collection of talent the U.S. maybe has ever put on the ice, from defense to goaltending to forwards.
Right.
And it's a different era. They're bigger, they're better, they're faster, they're stronger. I watch our practices. I work at Boston University, and I'm blown away at the speed that they play at. And it's just a tribute to the game and how far we've come as a country. And you're not just from, you know, in our days, JR, you were from Massachusetts or Michigan and Minnesota, and now you're from Florida, you're from St. Louis, you're from Arizona, California. The game has grown tremendously. And somebody was giving me this. I think 29% of the National Hockey League players right now are American.
32.
They're okay. 32.
32. When I came in in 1988, it was 14. Okay. Now we're at 32. And you know, you said something that was really interesting to me. And there's no question you guys opened the door. In 1980 was the biggest upset in sports history. And we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that maybe in a little bit. But since that you were up there with the boys having conversations, you're in the room, it is another generation. It is a different generation. You know, number one, what was the attitude like in the room? What was their mentality? What were they talking about? Were they excited? Were they nervous? Were they sitting there like with, you know, chomping at the bit? Because it's a different mentality. Putting on an American jersey is different than putting on an NHL jersey. Right. And now they're playing in the middle of the season for an American jersey. It's really hard to turn that off. Are they going to stay in that same NHL mentality where they have to play at this level? Or is it going to go higher because of the jersey they're putting on? So you were there last night. Tell me.
That's, you know, the first thing I said to him, Jeremy, and I've said this from day one for me, other than being a police officer, a firefighter, somebody who serves in the military, there's no greater feeling than putting on a USA jersey. And it's different. It's not like playing for Boston or Pittsburgh or the Vegas Knights. You're playing for your country. And I think those players got it. And that's one of the things I tried to, you know, I kind of talked about. You got to separate your differences right now. This is a whole different format. You're playing for your country. You can, you know, run one of your teammates. I'm sure Matthew's going to have a confrontation with somebody. And you know what? When it's over and said and done, they respect the players that are playing for their country, and that's why they're out there battling. And I think they're going to battle. I think it's going to be a great tournament. It is hard, I think, from a standpoint of they haven't played together.
Right.
But, you know, which is, you know, we played for 6 months. And even, the Olympic teams, they practice for a couple of weeks or whatever before they go. So it's going to be an adjustment right away. But I think they're so good that they can handle that very quickly. But I think they do understand the pride of putting on that USA jersey. And many of them have done it before in you know, world junior tournaments or world championships, but the scope of this is a little bigger. And it's a great opportunity for them. And I really got a sense that they're excited about it and can't wait to play.
Do you think the United States National Development Program has had a lot to do with that, Mike, as far as guys wanting to play for their country?
I think a little. You know, I'll tell you one thing, you probably don't know this. Herb Brooks was dead against that national development program. He fought it tooth and nail. And his argument was, we're spending a lot of money to develop a handful when we could spend a lot of money and develop a lot more. Mm-hmm. But clearly it's worked out. I mean, look at, you know, the players that have come from there. And I see what we have at Boston University. But still, you know, a lot of guys like to play for their high school or their private school or, you know, the World Junior. I mean, the USHL now is an up-and-coming league, and it's been like that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you play on the development team, you do get a little better sense putting the USA jersey on, because that's what you're doing throughout the course of your years of playing there.
Right.
You're representing the United States. So yeah. I think players get that. And if they don't get that, then they shouldn't be on the team.
Exactly. Okay, so this is the last question on this topic, because there's so much I want to get to you, Mike. Here, you know how much I love you and all the different things that we've talked about, but kind of break down the tournament. How do you see it going? Obviously, the rosters are great. The offense, defense, goaltending. You know, the Finns and Swedes are different. Break it down for us and give us your prediction.
Well, my prediction is going to be the United States, and I think partly because their goaltending is the best in the tournament. Mm-hmm. And when you get into a tournament in the short series, usually goaltending is a huge, huge part of it. So I think the U.S. has the best goaltending of anybody in the tournament. And I think that's going to be the difference. I mean, Canada's firepower up front is awfully good. But I think the U.S. team defense, the defensemen that they have, are stronger than any other country's defensemen. And I think that's what's going to make the difference in the tournament. I don't think you're going to see 6-5, 7-6 games because they haven't been together that long. Although their skill level is so good, it still takes a little while to get used to your partners and where they're going and what they're doing. So I'm going to go with the U.S. because of their strength in goal and strength on defense.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I can't disagree with you, Mike. I before you came on, I said to JR that I think this is the first tournament, whether it's Olympics, World Cups, whatever, first international event in years that I think the Americans are favored over Team Canada, and that's saying something. And you know, it's trickled down. We've seen it with the World Juniors the last 2 years with the World Juniors winning back-to-back. World Juniors, that was, as you guys talked about, the percentages of U.S.-born players in the NHL, that wasn't even a thought years ago that the U.S. would beat Canada in back-to-back World Juniors. It's very impressive.
We go into tournaments now expecting to win.
Exactly.
It's like it used to be. You know, it's not like, geez, let's hope we can perform maybe a bronze medal. No, bronzes aren't even acceptable anymore.
Right.
These players have one goal and one goal at all, and that's to win the gold. That's to bring it home. And it'll send a message to my 9-year-old grandson that maybe someday, if he ever became a good player, he's going to realize how special it is. Look at Austin Matthews standing on the podium with a gold medal around his neck. That resonates. And because there are so many young kids playing the game now, they're all going to be glued to this TV watching them play. It's different than it ever was before.
Yeah, like I was in 1980, like a lot of kids were in 1996, like a lot of kids were in 2002 when we won the silver. I mean, these are the stepping stone moments, the stepping stone games for countries. Nobody has had a stepping stone game or a stepping stone experience more than me, Chelly, Medano, Leach, Richter, LeClaire, Tkachuk, Amonte, because of 1980. And that was you guys. And I would love just to pick your brain. And I know you get asked this all the time, but take us back to that tournament. I mean, obviously you're coming in, you got a mishmash of Boston, Minnesota, you got a couple of Michigans thrown in there. And back then, Minnesota didn't like Massachusetts. Massachusetts didn't like Minnesota.
Yeah,
it was like, who is the hockey powers? And you guys are getting thrown in as a bunch of college guys, and you guys are going up against the greatest, probably the greatest machine in the world. But talk to me, what was it like going into that tournament? Obviously, Brooksy was nuts and crazy, but kind of take us back there. Like,
well, Herb was very similar to Jack Parker, JR. Now, that's how coaches coached in the 70s. They were in your face. They challenged you every day. They made you better players. One thing I always tell even kids today, if you don't respect and trust your coach, you're in trouble. And as hard as Herb was, we respected him and we trusted him. We trusted the process. This is the way it's going to be, boys. Whether you're from Michigan or Massachusetts, it doesn't matter. You're now on a different team and you're on the same team. You're not playing for the Gophers. You know, you're not playing for the Terriers or, Wisconsin Badgers or Minnesota Duluth or North Dakota or Bowling Green. That's where we were all the players were from. So we bonded right away. And I think that's the mindset of a hockey player that you learn at a young age, how important your teammates are.
Was there any kind of rub?
No.
Nothing at all.
We even to this day laugh about it. Now, like if Boston University plays Minnesota in hockey and we beat them, I call the Minnesota guys up right away. Hey, Terriers beat you guys the other day. So it never ends with the kidding back and forth. But once the team was picked, we were together and right away from day one. And again, I think that's the mindset of a hockey player, though. You learn that at a young age, how important your teammates are. If you ask any sports reporter anywhere in the country, what athletes are the easiest to deal with, they're going to tell you hockey players. I've never heard anybody say someone else.
Yeah, I agree.
That's just the makeup of a hockey player. You right away learn the respect and the trust that you have in your teammates and in the game itself. And we had that. And, you know, our team, Jeremy, would be the youngest team in college hockey today. Our average age was 22, 21 mm-hmm. and a half. I was 25. Fuzzy Schneider was 25. Neil Broughton was 18 years old. Mike Ramsey was 18. Davey Christian was 19. So again, it was a young team that we didn't know any better. We were just playing. We were just having fun. We didn't go into Lake Placid, you know, nervous or afraid or scared. We were anxious. We were curious. We were excited. This is the Olympics. This is in your own country. And I think because we were so young, we never got caught up in anything. There was no social media. There was no Facebook. Right. There was no Twitter. There were three TV stations. We weren't allowed to go to press conferences, so we didn't know what was being written, what was being said. We were just playing hockey in Lake Placid. And then when it was over, we went, oh, shit, this was a big deal.
Right.
Oh, man. Because we didn't know. I remember getting on an Eastern Airlines. How long ago was that? Plane. Yeah. And everybody in the plane stood up and started applauding. And I turned around and I didn't know who got on the plane. So it was eye-dropping, eye-awakening. When we won the gold medal, we went on Sunday. Monday morning, we go to the White House. President Carter sends a plane. We land in Washington. We get on the bus to go to the White House. And the streets were lined with people. Four,
no.
Eight rows, waving flags. And we're like, holy shit, this thing was a big deal.
Unbelievable.
It caught us totally by surprise. You know, my right hand for a month was swollen like you couldn't believe from shaking people's hands. it wouldn't happen like that today. I mean, heck, if we happened today, wow, would have been, I can't even imagine the public response. But I think that's what made it so great for us. And if this is the right word, the nativity of our team.
Right.
We were just playing hockey.
How much did what was going on in the country and the world have to do with with that whole mentality?
Not for us. No. For us, it was a hockey game. But for the country, we found out it was far greater. I mean, even today, I can't tell you, people come up to me. Some people will start crying, JR. They'll just break down because
I get moment, it. I'm getting a little weepy right. Just listening
moment,
to you.
The moment meant more to them than a hockey game. The hockey fan, yes. But for the average American, we could use a 1980 right now. The Bruins right. Come together. But, you know, people come up to me and they'll say, I remember where I was when we won.
Yeah.
And I go, I didn't know you were on the team. but that's what it meant. You know, that person living in Arizona or Texas, they didn't know anything about ice hockey, but they saw a group of young Americans putting on a USA jersey and showing the pride. And what makes this country so great is moments like that. We were, you know, I say this a lot too. We were working class kids. If you saw our backgrounds, we all came from families that, you know, parents worked and took care of their children and the sacrifices that our family made, our parents made, was a replica of our team in many ways. We were, as Herb called us, lunch pail, hard hat group of guys. That's what we were. Mm-hmm. And we just enjoyed what was happening and never knew it.
You know, I've watched the movie Miracle, obviously, probably 30, 40 times and 20 at least. And I watched it again last night. I wanted to just kind of watch it. And my son, Mike, is a 2012 here in St. Louis, and Bronson has watched it with me before, and we sat down and we watched the whole thing last night. And he said to me, it was off of one of the face-offs. He goes, those Russians look mean. And tell me, as you know, you were a little bit older, but there had to have been some imitation. They were, you know, Petrov, Mikhailov, Krutov, these guys, like, they were big and they were men. They were big. They were strong. I explained to Bronson last night that they were part of the army and that they had played together for years.
Right.
And they had to have been a little intimidating, right?
Well, they some of them were going for their third gold medal, which would be what, 12 years playing
right.
Together. Yeah, they were intimidating, but it's still a hockey game and you can't make it bigger than it is. You know, everybody talks about the Russian game and the Russian game, but guess what? If we don't beat Finland,
I know
we're not having this conversation.
Everybody forgets about that game.
Right? I know.
We wouldn't be talking. I wouldn't be invited to the Canada Cup, you know, the Four Nations tournament, because people would have said, "Boy, if he only could have beat Finland to win the gold medal."
And he had to come from behind again.
How hard was that to get ready for that game?
Well, this again is Herb Brooks. We beat the Soviets Friday night. We show up in the locker room Saturday morning for practice, and we're all laughing and signing pictures and hockey sticks, and he flips out. We had maybe one of the hardest practices we had all year was that Saturday morning getting ready for the Finland game. And I'm like, why is he so pissed off? We just beat the Soviets. But again, looking back, and this is why Herb was a great coach, he had to get all that energy out of us, all that excitement out of us, and made us aware that we had another game to play. And I told Herb this after the Olympics. I said, Herb, we were ready to play Finland. You didn't have to skate us again. But if there was another game after Finland, JR, we would have played. And that was the type of team that I played on. These guys just loved to play. We loved being together. We loved the challenges. We never looked at it as something we couldn't accomplish. As I tell people now, if you think you're going to lose, you probably will.
Right.
But we knew it was going to be hard. We knew we had to play well. We knew we had to do all the little things. But one of the things that Herb said, you know, we lost 10-3 to the Soviets right before the Olympic Games began.
In New York.
Square Garden, 10-3. Yeah. Totally, mm-hmm. totally crushed. But we were losing 6-0 after one period. And we played even with them for two periods. And Herb stressed that after the game. He said, guys, we're going to Lake Placid right now. Forget about this game. It's over. We're never going to talk about this game again. But remember how you played in the second and third, not the first. So we had a different mindset going up there because we didn't know if we were going to play the Soviets. They were in the other division. We had to worry about Sweden and Czechoslovakia and West Germany, three countries that people thought were going to beat us. So, you know, the Soviet game, all of a sudden, here it was, time to play. And you run the gamut of emotions. You're excited. You're anxious. You're curious. You're a little nervous. You have to be nervous. It's a big game. But throughout the game and throughout the Olympic Games, Herb constantly said one thing, play your game, play your game. He never once talked about what the other teams were doing. He never mentioned the 10-3 game against the Soviets. He never mentioned anything that Sweden was doing or Finland was doing. We needed to worry about what we needed to do in order to win, and that was to play our game. You know, if we got behind by a few goals, then maybe we would have had to change. But every goal stayed within, other than West Germany, we were losing to the West Germans by two goals. Other than that, we were down a goal throughout the Olympic Games and came back. And I'm going to give you a statistic, and I didn't know about this till about a year ago. Robbie McClanahan told me, in the third period of the Olympics, in the third period alone, we outscored our opponent 16-3.
That's unbelievable.
That is an incredible number.
Well, you know what? That tees me up for the next question then, Mike, because, you know, I know you helped out with the making of Miracle and so on. You just talked about the goal differential in the third period. Did Herb really skate you guys that hard?
Yes.
He did, eh?
Every teammate that I played with in 1980 went on and played in the National Hockey League said the best shape they were ever in their life was the 6 months playing under Herb. We practiced hard. Our drills were intense. We skated hard. We did the Herbies after practice almost regularly, not as much as we did in the Norway game in the beginning of the year. But our speed and our conditioning was a huge part of our success. And like I said, that's an incredible number. You're playing against some of the best teams in the world.
Yeah.
And dominate a third period like we did, that's the conditioning and the speed that which we played at. And we played four lines. You know, we didn't, you know, other than maybe Mark Johnson stay out there a little longer, because I've said this from day one, if it wasn't for Mark Johnson, we don't win. We don't win a gold medal without Mark Johnson. Let's make that clear right away from the beginning.
When he scored at the end of the period?
Whenever he scored all the time.
Right. Really?
Period. We didn't play well in the first period. And Magic, I'm on the ice at the time. I've seen the video. I'm at the red line. I look at the clock and I see 6 seconds. And I got to skate through center ice. I'm going to the bench. And all of a sudden, I see Magic just blow by me. And I'm like, where's he going? David Christian shot the puck in. Uh-huh. I figured it was just the end of the period. And then Mark, out of nowhere, picks up the rebound, bangs it in with no time left.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge goal.
Yeah, it was.
Instead of being down, we're tied, and we didn't play that well. We played okay.
Right.
But we made some big saves in the first period. But, you know, Mark's goal, Billy Baker's goal against Sweden with 28 seconds left to go. Mm-hmm. You know, Billy doesn't – we don't tie Sweden. Who knows how we react to the next game?
Right.
Well, you know, throughout the Olympic Games, we made plays. And I think Dave Silk said it recently. I was with Silky in an interview. And somebody said, you know, a miracle. Miracle's a catchy phrase, right? It wasn't a miracle. It sounds nice. Silky said it was a combination of 20 guys playing their best hockey together as a team over a two-week period of time. And I think he was right. I think we all played the best of our abilities over 2 weeks. And Jeremy, we would play sometimes four lines in maybe 2 minutes, maybe a little less. Mm-hmm. So you were out there sometimes for 15 seconds.
Turn it over.
And just keep going. Like I said, maybe Magic would stay out there a little longer because he was so good. But we rolled four lines. We didn't, you know, go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. So I think, again, it shows you the depth that we had and the skill level that we had from lines 1 through 4.
Yeah. Give us the best. Give us your best Herb Brooks story, because arguably he's one of the best coaches in hockey history. And there's all sorts of stories and all sorts of this and that, but there's got to be a Mike Ruzzioni favorite Herb Brooks story.
Well, there's a few of them. One time in practice, he told Kenny Morrow he was skating like he had a 10-pound fart on his head. Kenny was skating around. Kenny doesn't say much at all anyway. He's quiet. Skating around going, hey, what does it look like? What does it look like? And then he told Davey Christian he was playing worse every day, and now he's playing like in the middle of next week. And then weave, but don't weave for the sake of weaving. I'm looking at him like, what does he mean? Because, you know, the weaving interchanging, crisscrossing. We learned a new style of hockey. This is the thing that people don't remember. He took the European game, and he said to the USA Hockey, we're going to teach them the European game in 6 months. And people said, you can't do that. And Sir Herb said, I can and we will. So all of a sudden, JR, I'm doing drills that never would have done at Jack Parker. I'm flying the zone. What do you mean? Just take off. You just go. And then the wing's coming in, and we're doing, and every day in practice, we're crisscross. He yelled at Kenny Morrow again one time because he dumped the puck in the zone. Don't dump the puck in. That went out with short pants. That was another one of his lines. You work so hard to get it. Why are you giving it back?
We would
regroup. We would throw it back. We would regroup like the Europeans, like the Soviets did. Yep. So it was fun, too. Change is fun.
Yeah.
We never did before. And I think it highlighted our skill and our speed to be able to play that way. I think if we went in and played the old North American game where you got your butt against the boards and you break out, wouldn't have worked.
Right.
They'd have just crammed it back down our throat. So we were creative. So those are, you know, some of the things Herb would say, and other little things like he threatened to cut me right before the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you're not playing well. I got to do something here, but I'm going to tell people you hurt your back, and you know, we'll use that as an excuse, and I'll bring
you. Were you the captain at that time?
I was the captain. Yeah, and I'm thinking
Were you the captain the whole time?
Like, yeah, right when we got back from Europe, we voted, and there's no way in hell 14 Minnesota guys voted for me. I can promise you that.
No.
Craig Patrick said the players voted, but Herb counted the ballots. I can't believe Billy Baker was voted captain. Billy was a captain at Minnesota the year before, and there were 9 teammates on the team who played with Billy.
Sure.
Of course they're going to vote for their teammate. But I'll just change the subject briefly. I've said this, and I'll say it till the day I die. I was a captain amongst captains.
Right.
Mark Johnson and Bobby Sutter were captains at Wisconsin. Kenny Morrow and Mark Wells were captains at Bowling Green. Jack O'Callaghan was a 2-time captain at Boston University. Baker was a captain at Minnesota. Harrington and Pavlich were captains at Minnesota Duluth. Davey Christian was a captain at North Dakota. There were 20 players in the room, and I guarantee you every one of them was a captain of their high school team.
Yeah.
So to be the captain was fun. It was a great honor, but it wasn't a big deal because we had a team of leaders. And the important thing for me, and maybe this is why I was elected captain, one of the reasons I was one of the older players, but I think my teammates respected me on the ice, but more importantly, I think they did off the ice, and I think maybe Herb saw that and thought I might be the right guy for that. And also knowing it wasn't going to be a big deal. It wasn't going to be, I'm the captain, guess what?
Right.
You know, it was fun, it was nice, but, you know, you can't change who you are. You know, and I've said this many times, you know, an athletic event shouldn't change who you are. It clearly changed my life. But I'm, as my wife yells at me all the time, I'm still the same idiot that, you know, that I was in high school. So it shouldn't make you any different. And just because you're a captain of the team doesn't mean you have all of a sudden become someone different. Because now the guys will go, oh, what happened to Rizzo? He used to be a nice guy. No, now he's the captain, so he's a big wig. So I think our team had that respect for each other and the mindset, which helped us not only, you know, off the ice, but I think on the ice as well. When you play with people that you love and you care about, usually good things happen. And I think that's what our team had. I mean, we didn't suck. I mean, we had to have some pretty good players. But we had that unique bond and chemistry that makes good teams great teams. And I think that's one of the things that our team had that, you know, they maybe kind of showed a little in the movie. But in that locker room, and we're together now, if you saw the emails we send back and forth, we had the most immature men you would ever want to be around. But that was our makeup. That was part of our team. And I think Herb being the dictator that he was, that's the way it was going to be. And I think it made our team closer and bonded everybody together. It was us against him, and that's what he wanted.
Right.
And people don't realize how important Craig Patrick was to our success, because we needed Craig to say, Craig, you gotta calm him down a little, you know, back him off, give us some freedom, give us a little room out there.
I was just going to ask you about Craig, Mike. He seemed to be, from everything I've heard, obviously, you know, being in the league for a long time, and I would meet the Patrick family and so on, and just a tremendous family. Was he the good guy, obviously? Yeah. And Herb was the dictator at the time.
Yes, and that was the way Herb was going to coach. I think part of that was because there were so many guys from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. 12 guys in the team from Minnesota, 9 played at the U under Herb. So I think he had to separate that right from the beginning. And it was funny because he probably picked on the Minnesota guys more than the rest of us. Like if I said something funny, he might laugh. But if McClanahan said it, he might say, that's not very funny. So he kind of chose sides sometimes and took our side, the Eastern guy's side sometimes against his kids that he coached. But they all, you know, they all played under him. They all knew what he was like. And again, I can't tell you enough. That's how coaches coach. My high school football coach, my high school baseball coach, they drilled you. They constantly challenged you. Jack Parker at BU. It wasn't easy, but you understood what they were doing and why they were doing it. And that was the same thing with Herb. So you yell at me for 2 hours. That's all. I'm only going to deal with 2 hours. Then I'm going to go out and we're going to go have a few beers and you know, get ready for practice the next day. And you can yell at me again, but it's only a couple hours. I sometimes use the analogy. He was like your dad. You know, you love your dad, but sometimes you hate your dad because he makes you do things you don't want to do.
Oh,
That was Herb. There was as he used to say, there's a method to my madness.
Keenan was my Herb Brooks.
Right.
There you go. Yeah.
Hey, Mike, just to go back to the game against Russia, two questions that I have for you. One is, and I'll ask them both and you go ahead, is one, was the team surprised after the first period when they pulled Tretiak? And the second one was, do you think Tikhanov just, he couldn't believe what was happening and that's the reason that he didn't pull his goaltender to try to tie the game?
Well, the two things. First, when Tretiak wasn't out for the second period, I said to Herb, I said, Herb, he's out. Can they put him back in? And Herb said, yeah, they can put him back in. But again, it didn't matter who their goaltender was. I mean, Mishkin, he was the goalie when they beat the NHL All-Stars 6-0.
Right.
I tell people it's like taking out Patrick Roy and putting in Brodeur.
Right.
He was still the second best goalie in the Soviet Union. And Tretiak let in 2 goals in the first period. Maybe he was having an off night. We didn't know. But again, it didn't matter to us who their goalie was. He never said, oh, Tretiak's out. We got a chance now. It was never discussed. Their goalie was their goalie. We'll worry about ourselves more so than anything else. So we didn't, again, care who their goalie was. And yes, I think I was on the ice because my line was up next. And Herb said on the bench, okay, hey, when they pull Mishkin, we're going with Pavlo Cheruzioni. And it might have been for Coda because Mark was out there with McClanahan and Silk, but he was going to pick up the next unit because Neil Broughton was my centerman, but I was going to go out there with Pav. And it might have been Phil or it might have been Buzzy Schneider. But anyway, so we were ready. And I kept looking at the bench saying, when's he taking him out? When's he taking him out? And he never did. I told someone later, maybe because they've never been behind before. So never had to deal with it. But I think we as a team were surprised that they didn't take him out. But again, I'll give you another statistic. And I didn't realize it till I was told by somebody. Because I've only seen the game twice, and I think the last time I saw it was like 10 years ago. I got a VHS tape of it, so that's how old it is. Mm-hmm. And in the last 10 minutes, I scored with 10 minutes left to go in the game, and the Soviets had 6 shots on goal in the last 10 minutes.
That's it, eh?
That's it.
That's unbelievable.
But in the movie, it's like they had 100.
Yeah, you're right.
we basically kind of shut them down in the third period, and they were doing things like dumping the puck in the zone. It was like they never dump it in the zone.
Wow.
So there were you know certain aspects of the game that you know that I maybe I'll watch it again someday and just see. You know, part of the joke around my hometown is that you know why don't you watch the game? And I say I don't want to be sitting at home and watching the game and one of my buddies shows up. Like let it go, it's over. Come on. I'll get to my grandkids.
Okay, so that's right. That leads us to the big question, right? Because you just said, you know, hey, listen, it's over. It was 1980, right? It was, you know, 45 years ago. You score the biggest goal in American history. You are an American hero.
Yep.
Pretty much everybody on that team went on to play pro hockey in the NHL, except for Mike Ruzioni, who probably everybody thought would. Bring us into the mind of Mike Ruzioni at 25 years old in the prime, scoring the biggest goal. Why didn't you go to NHL? Why'd you stop?
I decided it was time to move on. I was 25. I was offered Minnesota. The Rangers had my rights, but Minnesota and Buffalo were interested in signing me. I even had an offer to go to Italy and play over in Italy. But yeah, I went to camp with the New York Rangers at a college. And I saw the life and what it was like. I don't and firmly believe I was never given an opportunity to play. And now all of a sudden I have an opportunity to play. There's no question in my mind I could have played. I would have been an average player. I would have been a good third, fourth line player. I was a pretty good defensive player, so I probably would have been a good penalty killer. I know I would have been a good teammate, a good guy in the community. My dad always said there's more to life than athletics, and at some point the game ends. And it's not like somebody walked in and said, here's $10 million. I think I'll play, you know. So it wasn't a money issue. It was a peace of mind issue. And I just thought it was time to move on. I was going to coach and teach. I was a phys ed major. I called Jack Parker right after the Olympics and wanted to know if there was a chance maybe next year I'd have an opening as a coach. And he said, well, that'd be a great opportunity. Let's talk about it, you know, when the season ends. Then all of a sudden, IBM called and they gave me they hired me for 10 appearances, 5 at the Fontainebleau in Miami, which I'd never been to Miami before, and 5 at the Sir Francis Drake in San Francisco. And they were going to give me $5,000 for each appearance. That was $50,000. My dad never made $50,000 in his life. So I thought about, you know what, maybe there's something else out there for me. Maybe coaching and teaching, I can wait. 45 years later, I'm still waiting to coach and teach. Although I do work at BU and I do help out with our high school team. But for me at the time, Jeremy, it wasn't that big a deal. At 18 and 19, yeah, it was.
Was a little bit of your mind, and I know you need to move on and all that stuff. Do you think you would have made that decision if you didn't have that first crack at the NHL with the Rangers? And do you think that in the back of your mind, did your legacy or at least your reputation or your name on scoring that big goal, did you want that to be your final resting place?
No, I don't even think about that now.
Really? Really? Amazing, man. That's amazing.
The goal was something that I did as a part of a team when I had a chance to help out. I did. I've been around a lot of great athletes and some of them are the greatest people in the world. And I've been around a lot of athletes that I wouldn't give you two dimes to sit down with. I don't care the fact that I've won a gold medal or I scored the winning goal against the Soviets. It's more important that people respect me as a person and who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the legacy I want to have.
Yeah. So I think you got that in spades.
Well, so I scored the winning goal against the Soviets, but I'm an asshole.
Right.
I want it. And it's my own kids. I tell my kids all the time and my grandkids. What I did is what I did. What you do is what you do. And I don't expect you to score goals and get touchdowns and hit home runs. I expect you to be a good person, a good brother, a good neighbor, a good friend. Those are far more valuable than scoring the winning goal against the Soviets. Yeah, like I said, if it wasn't for Mark, my goal wouldn't meant nothing anyway. So I was happy that I contributed at a time when the team needed something to happen, and I happened to do it. But that doesn't take away from the play of Kenny Morrow or Davey Christian or Robbie McClanahan or Buzzy Schneider. Mm-hmm. So when you win as a team, you win as a team. One player doesn't make a difference, although I will say Mark did make a difference because of the way he played and the big goals that he scored. But you know who one of the nicest guys in our team was? Was Mark Johnson.
Really?
Your best players have to be your best teammates as well. And yeah. I think I learned that in high school. I learned that at Boston University. I don't have to explain to anybody my career. I know I was a good player. I know I put up great numbers at Boston University. Doesn't mean because I didn't play in the NHL doesn't take away from the success I had as an athlete. And I was I was an all-state football baseball player. I played more baseball than anything. So I can look back on my life and know that as an athlete, I was pretty successful. And it doesn't have to be measured by NHL or Stanley.
Yeah. Well, arguably you can, I don't think it's an argument. I think your impact on America or kids, people is way more profound, I think, maybe, than if you would have gone to the National Hockey League. Do you feel that because you have done so many great things in this country, you have done so many great things, you've affected and touched so many great people.
That's more important to me, Jeremy, than
because you have. And listen, let's not beat around the bush. Like when you ask anyone 1980, the first name is Mike Ruzzioni. It's not Johnson. It's not Schneider. It's not Jim Craig. No disrespect to them.
Right.
But what you've been able to do for other people, Michael, I've seen it. You've done it for me. Just in the community, at school, when you're doing appearances across, your speeches are amazing. It was a great decision. And what you've been able to do with your life, Michael, is truly, truly magnificent, man.
Well, thank you. But that's the way I was brought up. Mm-hmm. And I told you, if we didn't win, I'd still be living in Winthrop. I'd still be married to this. My wife and I have been together 50 years. Maybe I'd have more than three kids because I'd have been home more. But my friends are my friends. It shouldn't change.
No.
Who you are. And like I said, I'm very happy with the life I've lived and the opportunities I've been given. But I also understand we could have lost. So if we lose, why should I change who I am? And I think that's something that it's important to me, that people respect me, and I'll use that word, trust.
Yeah.
And that I'm a good dad, a good grandfather, a good friend. That's important for me. And to have all that happen and then look back and realize I was on a team that won a gold medal, what a bonus life I've had. And that's pretty much the way I look at things.
Listen, I don't want to keep you much longer, but I wrote down, and you tell me if I get this right, because I'm going to use this for the team I coach. Best players need to be the best teammates. Is that what you said, Mike?
100%.
Yeah, I love that quote. I think that's so important because – and I certainly see it around the local rinks in St. Louis, is unfortunately some of the kids that are playing AAA and other guys are playing single A or double A, they think they're the jack shit. And I love that. One last thing, because you talk about how, things are certainly way more important than a hockey game. How is Mr. Goodrow doing? You had a chance to spend time with him in Montreal.
Yeah, I did have he seems fine. I mean, outwardly he's fine. I'm sure inwardly he's dying. I mean, it's got to be hard. I can't even fathom. But he's a great guy. I said, I only had the pleasure of meeting Johnny once. And I think it was that Travis Roy benefit hockey game that Johnny was playing in. And I just remember this young kid with a great, beautiful smile on his face. And boy, was he skilled.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of just got to take it because I can't fathom.
No.
Especially knowing that his son would have been on this team and a big part of this team. But, the spirit and the life of Johnny probably lives with a lot of his players
right.
that he played with. And they carry that into the locker
room. Do you think they're going to have his jersey hanging in the locker room?
They do.
I believe it does.
They do. Yeah, I saw it. I was just going to say that as you guys know, the world or the junior team did that at the World Juniors in Canada. And Team USA has done that. I saw their locker today, and it's a great tribute to a great young man. So,
yeah. You know, it's the whole thing is sad, and nobody can understand it, obviously, more than the Gaudreau family. But the fact that the USA Hockey and Billy Guerin, who's a first class guy, even though he went to BC. I think that's a great tribute to Johnny, and I think the players understand that, and it'll be something that they'll be thinking about.
Well, listen, Mike, we've appreciated this your time immensely, man. It's
thank you.
You know how much I love you. Our friendship goes back a long ways, and your whole team made me believe in miracles. And listen, I know you said it's not a miracle, but it made me believe and want to be an NHL and an Olympian. So
you're awfully good at it. So
yeah. Thanks, man. Well, thanks for opening the door. Thanks for the energy. Thanks for being such a great person, not in hockey, but as a role model, as a person. Because
thank you very much, Smitty. Thank you as well. And stay safe, everybody. And let's hope we can bring a gold home for the Bruins. And probably see you on the golf course somewhere, Jeremy. My game
sounds
sucks.
Good.
So I just keep moving up a set of tees. I'm almost at the ladies' tee.
My game's still pretty strong right now, Mike. Like I keep it going. So.
I know it is.
Mike, it's been an honor for an old referee to I love the history of our game. JR and I love the history of our game, and I love going back in time and talking about special events. And for me, it's been truly an honor and a pleasure to speak to you, and I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and go BU. Sorry, Jeremy.
Go BC. you took the words out of my mouth because I was going to leave off going, let's go Eagles.
Yeah, but BU just won the beanpot, so we'll talk about that later.
Okay, yes, buddy. They did.
I love you. Right. I love you. See you later, Michael. You
take care, guys.
See you, Mike. That was unbelievable. Buddy.
Chills. I can't tell you how many chills I got.
Just awesome talking to him. Like, what a great guy. And just, you know, you and I said that at the end with him, like, you and I love the history of our game and special moments throughout the history of our great sport. And this is one of the top ever. And it was just, what an incredible guy. He looks great. He's, you know, I was starstruck. I got to be honest with you. I was starstruck.
Yeah, and you know, his mentality is what you want to teach every kid, right? 100%. Every athlete. I mean, read that quote again. Read that quote again.
Best players need to be the best teammates.
Yep.
I love that.
And that brings me to the kids nowadays. Are the best players the best teammates today? I know when I was playing, our best players were the best teammates. Chris Chelios,
correct.
Keith Tkachuk, Joe Thornton, you know, I can go on and on. They were the most fun to be with. They're the Sidney most fun to be with.
Exactly. Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, those players love those guys. They're not only great players, but they are great teammates. I love that quote, and I'm going to use it because I know we've lost a lot of that. So
we have.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Got me pumped to watch the Four Nations tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm excited too. Like I said, let's just hope everybody stays safe. We got some guys that we're going to be watching closely. Mm-hmm. Obviously Austin Matthews with his wrist. I'm sure Alex Ovechkin is really happy being on vacation right now, give himself a little bit of break because what he's doing in this game right now, putting goals up on that scoreboard still.
It's unbelievable.
And
it's impressive.
He has an outside shot of breaking that record this year.
What's he need, 17?
I think he needs 16 to tie, 17 to
17
pass.
To go ahead, yeah. Yeah.
And he's got 23 games, 24 games. I mean, obviously the odds are against him. It's going to be a hell of a long summer if he gets to be within one, two, or three goals. That's goodness. For sure.
Right.
But, so that brings me to that question. Do we want to see Alex Ovechkin break it this year, or is it better for the National Hockey League and for the game to have him do it, say, in October to start a year?
I think it's better if he could do it in one season. You know what I'm saying? I know that doesn't make probably a lot of sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense.
Instead of splitting it up where he needs two in October and he gets two. I just think it would be more dramatic down the stretch if all of a sudden he gets a Hattie one night and now he's down to five games to go and he needs seven goals. Can he do it? You know, I think that the hype and the excitement isn't going to be as great in October as it would be in late March, early April.
Okay, so that brings me to another question. This team is probably the most surprising team in the league.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, they are without a doubt the most surprising team in the league for what they're doing right now. They are going to be racing towards the playoffs. They're going to have a high-seeded spot. If Alex Ovechkin doesn't break the record this year, do they go into the playoffs a little down? Or
no. No, or, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all.
Because I don't think this team is even thinking about Alex Ovechkin's. I think they're just playing, and they're playing well together. And I'd be curious to know if Alex said something to the team and said, listen, my goals are going to come. Don't worry about me. And I, knowing him and knowing the type of character he is, I bet he did say something to them.
I agree 100%. He's not... I've never seen him to be that type of player, a selfish player. He's all about the team and team success. And
well, he loves his team.
He loves playing hockey. He loves playing hockey. What is he, 39 now? He loves playing hockey. He's, you know, and competing. And, you know, and I think Spencer Carberry has done a tremendous job there. And I agree with you 100%. I don't think that this is their focus. Their focus is let's keep this train going down the tracks because they've done as you alluded to, they're a bit of a surprise this year and it's fun to see.
Yeah, it really is. But they definitely have been the surprise team. And Winnipeg's been unbelievable too, but they've been creeping up. We thought Washington was going to just fall off the map and have to rebuild, but what they're doing this year is just amazing. But
we need Ovi in the playoffs. We need Sid in the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, you know, I'm looking forward to watching Sid tonight. But he's a little banged up. He didn't play his last game in Pittsburgh in the regular season to rest up for the Four Nations.
Yeah,
and I don't think he would ever take a trade. Things I've seen with him, he wants to retire a Penguin, but. We need Sidney Crosby in the playoffs. Our league's a better spot when those two guys are in the playoffs.
Yeah, no question. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to be at the final in Boston next week, next Thursday. So I'm excited about that.
Nice.
So in saying that, we're going to have to find a time to do our show next week since I'll be on a plane traveling to Boston on Wednesday. Maybe we can do it Thursday afternoon before the final game.
That'll be awesome. That'll be a great atmosphere, especially if it's Team USA against Team Canada in Boston. That place will be rocking.
That place will be rocking. I'm going to say my prayers. I'm going to wish for that final. But
yes.
Great job. Great job today, Peelzy.
You too, buddy.
We thank Mike Ruzioni. Obviously, he's just was such a dynamic and great storyteller. I love when I don't have to talk. I can just listen. And Mike Ruzioni definitely brought the goods tonight. And thanks
awesome.
For whiskeyandwild.com. Go to whiskeyandwild.com for the best whiskey ever. To protect the neck guards, my boy Tim Peel, making sure every young kid is happy and safe on the ice. And to our other big sponsor, Bet Online, thank you for all your support. And again, thanks for watching. And we will see you guys next week on No Filter. It's Snipes and Stripes. Take care, guys.
See you, buddy.
See you, buddy.